One day closer to the NCAA Super Regionals, Tigers going off the draft board to Major League Baseball will update you. We'll talk to a second rounder, the first Tiger taken off the board. We'll talk to a former Tiger who's living the dream playing professional baseball. What's it like to be in high A league baseball? Michael Hugenin joins us to talk all things college football, including when Nick speaks, people listen. NCAA track and field championships underway. Mondo about to jump. And game three of the NBA Finals. Clay or no Clay? That's the question of today, Wednesday, June 5th, 2019.
The pitch. Swinging a fly ball left field. This one's deep. It's got a chance. It's gone. A home run. Grand slam home run for Miguel Cabrera off Snell.
No balls and a strike on Riley, and the pitch on the way. Hit well out towards right field. This one climbing at altitude, heading for the seats. This one is gone. That's a three-run homer out of Austin Riley, and the Braves have the lead. And this kid continues to swing a stick of dynamite here in the National League.
Change up, and he rips that down the right field line. Fair or foul, and it is fair, and it's gone. Kemp with a home run puts the Astros on top with his third of the year. It's 1-0.
And that was like lightning.
Oh, baby. Hello and good afternoon. Welcome. Hump Day Edition. The Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. My main man, CD, producer extraordinaire. He's in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, and 103.7 The Game. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. Great to be with you. Thanks so much for including us in your daily listen, however you so desire to do so. We've got the NBA Finals, Game 3. Man, it's been a while since these teams have played, and the big question is, Klay Thompson, will he or will he not play? Kevin Durant won't, but will Klay Thompson? And will Toronto go back to that box and one on Steph Curry? Much more from that. NCAA track and field championships get underway. Day one today, starting at the very end of our show at 4 p.m. in Austin, Texas. Mondo trying to get the collegiate sweep, indoor, SEC, outdoor championships. He's trying to get, and who's going to bet against him? But we begin today with more on LSU and baseball. Again, tickets go on sale Friday, 8 a.m. for those who are non-season ticket holders for the Super Regional as Florida State is coming to town. Josh Smith, shortstop extraordinaire, 67th overall pick, the second round pick of the New York Yankees, will join us and we'll talk about his day, his career, and this LSU Tiger baseball team. Looking forward to talking to Josh. That's coming up at around 2:32 this afternoon. We've got a couple of guests in hour number two, which always begins with CD and I going over the hot topics of the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Cole Freeman was a second baseman for LSU, played under Paul Maneri, and now he's in professional baseball, and he's trying to work his way up the charts. We'll share his thoughts on what's it like in pro baseball, because a lot of these kids, Antoine Duplantis, for instance, drafted in the 12th round by the New York Mets today. So we wish Antoine the very, very best of luck. And what's it going to be like for him. So we'll share some of those stories with Cole Freeman and get his thoughts on this LSU baseball team. He's not far removed from this club at all. Still very close to Josh Smith and Antoine DePlantis and Zach Hess and others. And then it's hump day, so that means Huguenin. Hump day with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will join us as well. We'll have our sports history lesson today and our birthday wishes as per the norm. So we are brought to you each and every day by Hooters. Hooters right there on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Oh, it's a special Wednesday. Ask for the Wings Day platter. 10 boneless wings, fries, and a dressing for only $8.99. It's every Wednesday when you dine in at Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Hooters just makes you happy. It's a tough time of the year for college baseball coaches, and it certainly works for Paul Menary as well. You go recruit. You get the best recruiting class in the country. Sometimes you win. Sometimes you lose. Classic example. Classic example. With a shortstop named Christian Cairo of Calvary Christian High in Tampa, Florida. He went in the fourth round of the Cleveland Indians as the 130th overall pick. Paul Menary thought he had him. Cairo and his parents had visited Menary at LSU in person for about 90 minutes yesterday. Cairo was getting uniformed, getting his uniform fit, his shoes fit. Took a tour of the new weight room and all the facilities there. Then Paul had him set up to meet with his academic advisor to go over his classes and all this stuff. All this stuff. So he's over there. The mom is crying because she's sending her son off to college. They had a great visit. Christian goes to the academic advisor to set up his summer classes. And then, while he's sitting in there with the academic advisors, he gets a phone call from the Cleveland Indians, and they offer him close to $1 million. The young man looked at his parents, told them, they got up. They walked out. They call Paul Menary, told me, I'm going to sign with Cleveland, and they leave and fly back to Tampa. Just like that. And Paul Menary had this comment to say about what it's like to recruit a kid like Christian Cairo.
In the meantime, Christian Cairo arrives on campus with his mother and father. I sit down and visit with him for about an hour and a half. We talk about the future. We talk about the experience he's going to have here. I walk him down, show him the new weight room. Mom's crying because she's sending her son off to college. You know, we have a nice visit. Send Christian over to see Kirsten DeFusco, our academic advisor, to set up his summer classes. And while he's sitting in there with her, he gets a phone call from the Cleveland Indians, and they offer him close to $1 million, and they get up and walk out and come by and tell me they're going to sign, and they leave, fly back to Tampa.
That's tough. You lose some, but then again, you win some. Denham Springs infielder, Cade Doty, and center fielder, who made Coach O very happy and Paul Menary very happy, Maurice Hampton, both said, nope, I'm coming to LSU. And here's the skipper on them.
So, you know, he turned down a lot of money, you know, and stood by his commitment to come to LSU to play football and baseball. Obviously, we're excited about that. Kay Doty was another player that very easily could have been drafted, you know, in the early rounds and got a significant signing bonus. But he told me on Sunday, not to give you too much private information, but he told me Sunday before our game against Southern Miss that you know, that he was pricing himself out, that he gave him a figure that there was no way in the world they would meet, so that nobody would waste a pick on him, and that he was coming to school. So I told him, well, if we beat Southern Miss, I'll feel like we won both ends of a doubleheader today. So he's already on his way off to New York, state of New York, to play in a collegiate summer league, and excited about having both of those guys on campus.
Just for your info, Maurice Hampton Jr., the two-sport athlete, went off the board in the 23rd round of the MLB draft. Some had him pegged as around the 23rd overall pick. He made his decision known. He turned down $1.8 million, had himself valued at about $2.7 million. Nobody offered that. He said, I'm coming to LSU. He has made Coach O and Paul very happy. That's going to be a cornerback slash starting center fielder for the Tigers next year. So good news for them. And Paul Maneri gets him for nothing because he gets a scholarship to play football. And unlike some coaches in the past, they would never have allowed a player to play both sports. But Coach O, Paul Maneri, working together, and that's a good thing. So much more on the Super Regional. Josh Smith will be joining us in about, 20 minutes to share his story, the 67th overall pick in the draft. So congratulations to all those that got drafted. Some didn't, but all the focus I think you'll hear is on what faces this team this weekend as Florida State red hot comes to town. Should be awesome. Should be awesome. Looking forward to it. All right. We'll take a timeout. The other big story nationally, the NBA Finals, game number 3, as the scene shifts from We the North to Oracle Arena, Oakland, California. We'll hear from several of the key participants when we return. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana's number one sports station, your source for LSU sports and those red-hot Houston Astros. We'll be right back.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Seventeen minutes after the hour, CD back in the 237 Roof Studios. Yours truly here. We shift our focus now to the NBA Finals Game 3 series tied at a game apiece as the Golden State Warriors somehow, some way, stole game number 2 in Toronto without Klay Thompson for the fourth quarter, without Kevin Durant. And the big question heading into game number 3, obviously, is Klay Thompson. Why not go to the horse's mouth? Here's Klay Thompson talking about and updating his injury.
Obviously, I'll do anything I can to be out there, but it's all in their hands, and if there's any pain, it would be a no-go just because of the position we're in. You know, this could be a longer series, so there's no point in trying to go out there and re-aggravate it and potentially keep myself out of the whole entire finals instead of just one game.
I don't know if he plays tonight. I really don't because, man, all he has to do is tweak it one more time, and he could miss the rest of the series. But I know players, they want to play. They want to compete. They want to and they want to win. And Klay Thompson talked about this setback could actually make him stronger.
I mean, injuries are never fun. It's the most unfortunate part of sports. But it tests your character. And, you know, playing through pain makes it all worth it in the end. Especially this time of the year. I don't think anyone's 100% healthy on both teams. As cliche as it is, dig deep and realize we have months to rest after this and recover. So for me, it's just about doing everything I can up till tip-off tomorrow to be able to go.
I love Klay Thompson. I mean, he is so good. I love some Steph Curry as well. And he is he talks about the attitude of this club. They've been to the NBA Finals for years now, and they've won back-to-back titles after they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James. So they understand where they are, and he knows as well as anyone how battle-tested the Warriors are.
We all just understand the moment. We're very locked in and focused on adapting to the circumstances that are thrown at us right now with, you know, a lot of injuries and kind of uncertainty of, you know, even who's going to be able to play. So we've been through a lot, had a lot of different experiences. This is just, you know, adding to that book. So we got to be ready.
Big story is Kawhi Leonard, of course. He's got 57 points, 28 free throw attempts, and 22 rebounds in two games. So it's really tempting to see that, to say that he's fine. But honestly, I don't know. He has labored. He doesn't look 100%. He looks like he's limping a little bit and laboring a little bit. But, hey, he's a warrior. Pardon the pun. And he knows what he has to do. And he talks about knowing about his body and the fatigue that it's going through.
Right now it's possible 5 games left and, you know, about 12 days. If you could run, really. I mean, if you can't run, then you're not going to be able to play. You know, that's how you pretty much measure things at this time. That's all I could really say. If you can run, you definitely just cannot play.
He cannot play. So he's not running very fast, but he's still playing. And the matchup with Klay Thompson guarding him, and sometimes he's guarding Klay and the Warriors, Kawhi touched upon it.
I mean, it's fun. I've been knowing Klay for a long time, just living in California. And, I mean, I just go out and play still, you know what I mean? I'm not just playing against him at the moment. You know, they switch a lot. You know, they're a great defensive team. And just try to, you know, take the challenge.
Try to take the challenge. Draymond Green took the challenge of getting in shape. He lost 25 pounds. He's not nearly as boisterous and barkable at the officials when a call doesn't go his way. And he's locked in and he's focused and he's doing what he needs to do. And Draymond talked about the hunger that still exists within him.
Not necessarily a chip on your shoulder, but you have to have things that you're striving for each and every day because, you know, as we all know, like, there's just going to be some days that you get up and you just don't want to do it. What is that thing that's pushing you? And so, you know, if you set goals and you reach them and then, like, that's it, it'll show everybody else to see that's it. You have to continue to set new goals as you reach your goals, and, you know, that's obviously what I've, you know, tried to continue to do.
He tries to continue to do that. Yes, indeed. Kyle Lowry, kind of the voice of the Toronto Raptors, talked about the mindset for tonight's game with his club trying to steal one on the road.
I think we come into a sense of urgency, period. No matter, you know, the situation, we want to win as many games. We want to be the first to 4. And every game is an urgent game. You're in the NBA Finals, so it doesn't matter. They still got professional basketball players down there, and they're really talented basketball players. So you still got to be ready to go out there and play your butt off and play hard.
I got to give some love to the former Pelican, albeit briefly, DeMarcus Cousins. Never saw the type of game that he had in game number 2, where he had 11 or 12 points, double-digit rebounds. Every big rebound they needed to get, he got, and he got 6 assists. He was terrific, much to the joy of Steph Curry.
I'm just happy for him, to be honest. I mean, there was so much uncertainty around his timeline, you know, coming back. And for this to be his first finals experience, you can't be, you know, more happy for him to have an opportunity to really impact the series in a positive way for us.
He has done it so far. Now, he wasn't effective at all in game number 1. He got 28 minutes in game number 2. He has become a factor, and the head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse, knows it, and he talked about Boogie Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously came out with a certain game plan against Gasol, right? No, he played great, and I figured, you know, he's an all-star player. He's got tons of talent. He's a big body. Figured as the series goes on and he gets the timing back and the thing, he'll keep playing better.
Just got to get in game shape, right? I mean, it's hard for a big man to go through all of that, but I'm sure his confidence is sky high. So we'll see. Here is the official word from Steve Kerr about some of the other Golden State Warriors and his thoughts on Klay Thompson for tonight's game.
Kevin won't play tomorrow, but he's ramping up his exercise routine, his workouts. And Klay is day-to-day, so he's questionable. And Loon is out for the series. So there's your medical update.
There's the medical update. Steve Kerr's been through the rigors. He understands as a player, as a front office man and now as a coach. Injuries, well, they're part of the game. He understands that.
It's just the way it goes, you know, and we've been playing 100-plus games for 5 years now. Not all of our players, but our team. And so we've got a lot of guys who have played long, difficult seasons, and, you know, they take great care of themselves. But, you know, there's a certain amount of luck involved with this, too. And we know that. We've been on both sides of that.
Game 3 tonight, 8 o'clock our time on ABC at Oracle Arena. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know what you do. You got a player that wants to play in Klay Thompson. All it takes is one misstep, and now that injury becomes magnified, and it may take you a long while. You never fully recover from that until you get into the off season and can get off of it completely. But I know Klay Thompson wants to play. He wants to get another title. And we'll see what happens. But again, what is Toronto going to do? Because without Klay Thompson, now the whole focus is on Steph Curry, and it changes the dynamic of the game completely. People ask me who's got more pressure on them: Golden State going home, trying to maintain the home court. I think all the pressure is on Toronto. They've got to get one of these games. Particularly tonight, if Klay Thompson doesn't play, they've got to get it because Kevin Durant's coming. He's on the way, and that changes the whole complexion of everything once that scoring machine gets back. I think Kevin Durant could fall out of bed after not having played for a month, could fall out of bed and get an easy 25. I really do. And I think he'll do that in this series. They're earmarking game 4, maybe game 5. Who knows? But all the pressure's on Toronto. And if Steph Curry can guide this team tonight to another win, wow, does that fill a hole in his resume? And as he aims to fill the hole in his trophy case, and that is a finals MVP. And I think he's on the way to it. I really do. All right, game 3 tonight. We'll recap it all tomorrow. Coming up next, leadoff hitter, shortstop, he's got all the tools. Throws right, bats left. Tremendous leadoff hitter, tremendous shortstop, continuing the legacy of really good ones that LSU has put out. Drafted by the New York Yankees, 67th overall, Josh Smith will join us to talk about baseball. Here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back. Hey, we do welcome you back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Getting ready for the Super Regional as Florida State comes to town. First game Saturday, 2 p.m. And with a lot of weight off of his shoulders because he was drafted in round 2 as the 67th overall selection to the New York Yankees from Baton Rouge Catholic High School, shortstop for the LSU Tigers, Josh Smith. And Josh is kind enough to join us today. First off, Josh, thank you very much for coming on the show with us, and congratulations, man. How are you feeling these days?
Yeah, thank you guys, first off, for having me on. Appreciate it. But everything's pretty good right now, feeling good. Excited for this weekend and excited to be on the show, so thank you all.
When did you get the word? How did you get the word that the Yankees were selecting you?
Yeah, so my family and I were sitting in our living room waiting, and first round passed by, didn't hear my name. First few picks passed by, the second round, didn't hear it, and then finally they actually found out on the TV, so it was pretty cool to get to share that with my family. Gave my mom and dad a big hug, so it was pretty cool.
How big of a scream was erupted in the Smith household?
Oh, yeah, that was a big one. My mom was tearing up a little bit. Dad was super pumped up, so it was a good time.
Have you had a chance to talk to some of your teammates from previous years that have gone the same route, and what What do you expect?
Yeah, so, I mean, not really trying to focus on that right now. I'm trying to focus on the Super Regional this weekend, you know, so I'm excited about that. It's going to be crazy this weekend at Alex Box, and I think everybody in Baton Rouge is getting ready for that, and we're all excited, so
absolutely
happy to be a part of this team still.
Yeah, that was a bad question on my part. Of course,
no,
we're focused on this thing, and my goodness, if anybody sets the tone better than you as a leadoff hitter, I don't know who does. I mean, one pitch, one swing, 1-0, Tigers get the lead. How about that?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I think that was my first time doing that this year. So lucky enough to put a good swing on it and try to get us going early. And Fawny came behind me and got his 353rd hit. So that was a pretty cool inning for
him. Yeah. It was a heck of an inning, I'm telling you. We had Twani on the other day, and I'm going to ask you the same question. This is a completely different team, it seems like, from the outsiders like me looking into you than you were a month ago. Take me into that clubhouse, because y'all know each other. We're all on the outside speculating, guessing. We have no clue. But inside that clubhouse, when did things turn around? Because you... Do you agree this team is different than they were a month ago, or am I wrong there?
Yeah, no, I mean definitely wrong or definitely right. This team is different, but we've believed the whole time that we've been a good team. You know, we just had some bad luck early on with some injuries to some arms, but I think really what's turned our season around has been Landon Marceau and Saul Garza stepping up for us big and giving us that edge to compete against some of those teams. So those two guys have really, really been a factor for us and on our success in the later parts of the season.
This is a typical Paul Maneri type of thing. You know, it's not, I've always said, it's not how you start, it's how you finish that counts. It has been a roller coaster ride of a season. You guys have never really been totally healthy, but this is about the healthiest you have been, and it's at the right time of the year.
I mean, you can't win a championship in February, you know. So it's good to be playing our best ball at this time of the year. Team's clicking. Everybody's feeling good. Everybody's confident. Those rookies are kind of getting to be veterans now. They're not really freshmen anymore, so they've been in that situation, and it's awesome, man. I think this is when you want to be your best at this time of the year, and I think we're playing our best ball right now.
What's it like? I mean, I played basketball at LSU, and I played in front of 14,000 people, many, many a night, back, way back in the day. What's it like playing in front of those 11,000 at the Box, and it's going to be raucous again this weekend?
Oh yeah, there's nothing like it. It's special. You can feel the game kind of turn in certain innings when something happens and the crowd gets involved. You can really feel it, and it helps us play. It kind of keeps us relaxed to a point almost where we know we got everybody behind us, helping us, cheering us on. And we love coming out, seeing a full crowd. And last weekend was awesome. And I think all the guys are expecting a good weekend again this weekend. So,
Josh Smith, shortstop for the LSU Tigers, selected in round 2, the 67th pick overall for the New York Yankees. He'll have plenty of time to think about that. The goal is to win two this weekend and get to Omaha, and that's the goal, and that's what we're going to focus on. How much attention to detail do your coaches give you players as far as scouting reports are concerned, particularly with Florida State?
Yeah, so we really haven't talked much about a scouting report yet because we still got a few more days, but we know they got a really good team, some really good arms, starters, even in their pen too. We're lucky to get to play against them, man. It's two college baseball programs that have been going at it for a while, two of the best programs in the country. They got a really good coach over there, Mike Martin, so we're excited to get to play those guys, and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
You're used to playing a lot of games in very few days. So you win the regional on a Sunday. You don't play again till a Saturday. How do you and your teammates stay sharp while still getting some much-needed rest, I would believe?
Yeah, so just maintaining your focus and practice, not really taking a day off, getting your reps in, not overdoing it, but just kind of going in every day with that attitude of we got to get better, can't be complacent, and I think that's what we've done this week so far, and we'll try to keep it up this week. So,
Josh Smith, kind enough to join us. I ask about a scouting report that you get from Florida State. Other teams scout you. How do you see pictures? Because they, you know, you're the first one they get to see, and they don't want to put you on base. They want to kind of get the inning over with, obviously. But what do you see? Is there a trend that you see developing with the way pictures approach you when you're at bat?
I mean, I guess every team's a little different. They have their own scouting report, but that leadoff, I mean, I know it's an important at bat for us and for them. So they're trying to get at me, and I'm trying to get at them. You know, so take pride in it. I know they're coming at me with all they can, and I'm coming at them with everything I got. So it's a fun at bat, a lot of competitiveness, and just try to get that tone started the right way for us in the game.
So you're starting off the game. Here comes the first pitch, and what was that pitch? And you just pulled it, and it was gone, and the place went nuts. I mean, that you must have seen the stripes on that ball, the seams.
Yeah, it it felt good. I was just sitting fastball, trying to go up the middle with it, and got lucky enough to get under a little bit and hit it out. And it was a special moment for me and the team. The crowd was involved, so it was awesome.
You're Baton Rouge born and raised. You went to Catholic high school. Tell me about your growing up. Did you play all kind of sports? And when did you decide that baseball was it and that was what you were going to focus on?
Yeah, so growing up, played all three sports. Got to high school, just played football and baseball. Played football freshman year. Quit after my freshman year. And I just focus on baseball just to be able to go to some of those fall tournaments and get a look from scouts on me. And from then on, Catholic Coach Bass was awesome to me. He's to this day, we talk a good bit. So it's just he had a huge impact on me, and lucky to have those guys over there. So it's been a fun ride, and now I'm at LSU, and it's been a dream come true for me.
I'm kind of curious. You throw right. When did you start swinging a bat left-handed? Was that just from day one, or did somebody say, hey, try it this way? How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I think I was just born like that, I guess. I just picked it up and just started swinging left-handed. My dad would toss me balls in the backyard, and I just swung left-handed, so.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
That's terrific. You know, you lost. How tough was that season when you had to sit out a year, and how did you fill your time when I know you were like, man, I just want to go play?
Yeah, that was probably one of the tougher points in my career for baseball, not being able to play. I think I'd played probably 18 years in a row of baseball, and to not be able to play that last year was tough. But teammates helped me out, helped me get through. My roommates were good to me. Family was good to me. And really just kind of took it in, took it for what it was and learned from it. I got to sit back and watch the game a little bit and just get a work ethic on to get back on the field. And luckily I am today, so.
How much baseball have you learned? I mean, you've been playing it all your life, but when you get to LSU, just how good is the coaching? How much have you learned about the game?
It's awesome. One thing Coach Maneri is big on is just discipline and fundamentals of the game, and that's why we love Coach. He puts the pressure on us in practice to get better, and it makes the games almost feel like another practice, really, because we have so much pressure put on us in practice, you know, and they expect a lot of you, but I mean, when you're expected a lot, you have a lot of responsibilities, and you got to do those. But this coaching staff has been awesome, and I'm lucky to have been under their wings for 3 years so far. So,
well, I can't thank you enough for your time, man. Look, congratulations, and you know, it's our duty to say that. And the Yankees, I think, got themselves a steal of a deal with the best shortstop in the SEC. But I know where your focus is. I'm glad it is. We'll be out there. Good luck this weekend. Let's get two and go to Omaha, all right? Let's do it.
Let's do it. Hey, thank y'all for having me on. Y'all have a great day.
All right, you too. Josh Smith, kind enough to join us. He's going to be a Tiger till he can't be one anymore, and then he's going to head into the Yankees farm system and try and work his way into the bigs. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And welcome back. If you are a fan of track and field, then you have really been keeping your eye on the LSU Tigers this year. They are beginning the NCAA championships today. Today is day one in Austin, Texas. Just had a wild hair and shot a text message to the highly successful head coach of the track and field team, Dennis Shaver. Said, "Hey, can you come on for a few minutes?" He was quick to say yes. Dennis, thank you. I know it's a busy day, but how excited are you with the group of athletes you have on the men's side and the women's side as you approach a possible national championship?
Well, Jordy, we're just thrilled to death to be here, to say the least, and really looking forward to the competition. I know that today they've changed the time schedule, moved it up. We run our first race at 4:02 today on ESPN3 and ESPN2, so it'll be fun. People can tune in if they're not here in Austin and watch it.
We're in Acadiana, as this show is, and everybody wants to know about Mondo. When does his quest for the sweep of the pole vault take place?
Well, Mondo is going to be starting the vault. I think it's at 4:30 today is when they kick off the pole vault. And, he's obviously defending his national indoor title and looking for that sweep of the SEC as well as the NCAA championship. So we're really looking forward to him getting started. He's feeling good. I know he's excited.
Yeah.
He's been looking forward to this day. And Texas, provides a pretty good venue to get off some good vaults.
Well, it would be quite a feat. His brother became the all-time LSU hit leader over the weekend, and if Mondo can do what he is capable of doing, he'll sweep the – it must be nice to be a DePlantis, right? My goodness.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. And of course, Antoine was drafted today.
Yeah.
So that just adds a little bit to it also. The family's been busy and anxiously awaiting the draft, and now anxiously is waiting to get this pole vault over today.
It's been a long process. You've got to qualify. You've got to get through the preliminary stages, which you did. And now for the first time in what seems like forever, you don't have to travel up to the Great Northwest. It must have been nice to catch a quick flight to head to Austin instead of Eugene.
Yeah, it definitely was. And obviously we're familiar with Eugene, but we're also very familiar with the venue here just because we come every year to the Texas Relays where we always have great success. And I know our kids are really looking forward to stepping on the track and competing. The men go today, women tomorrow, and the men finish things up on Friday, and the women finish on Saturday.
You got four highly intense days with you. This is your men are ranked high. They're number three in the country. And we've talked before, your field athletes have really set the tone, and I'm sure you're looking forward to them doing what they are capable of doing.
Yeah, definitely. And for the first time, I think, our field events, our jumping events are really critical to us. The running events, we're going to continue to do what we can. But these field events that we have today, the final of the pole vault, of course, with Mondo, and then we've got three guys in the finals today in the long jump, which includes Keenan Jones on the football team. He had a great preliminary round, and he's here also, so that's exciting, too.
Is this a fast track that they've got at Austin? In other words, are we going to see some records broken?
I think you might. It depends on the weather a lot of times. Today it looks like everything's going to be legal. There's very little wind, which is really important. So don't be surprised to see. When you get to this meet, everybody's fast, Jordy, and the conditions are good. There's going to be some records set. There's no doubt about it.
You have told me before it's the SEC championship is sometimes harder than this. How so?
Well, the SEC championship meet, requires not only, high quality, but also you need to have a considerable depth and scoring in all the event areas. And when you get to the NCAA meet, it's not so much about depth. It's just about the quality that you can bring. A team that over the past, we've had an opportunity and actually won NCAA championships when we haven't won SEC. So, we're not as healthy coming into this meet this year as what we would like to be, which is a little bit of a disappointment for the guys. But I know this, anything can happen at this track meet. There's not a lot of difference between the top-ranked team and the fifth-ranked team. So we're kind of in the mix. We just got to take it one event, one day at a time, Jordy.
I understand you've got to be successful in with the jumpers and the field events, and then when it comes down to the track, what is the key for you to accomplish what you really want to do?
Well, I think the biggest key is we're going head-to-head in the long jump, triple jump, high jump. We're going head-to-head with a couple of the teams that are you know, have a chance to win. And then also, I think that the 4x100-meter relay is going to be important to us and how the other teams do, as well as, you know, when we get into the 200 meters and the 110 hurdles, all those events. Some of our competitors that we're trying to beat are in those events, too. So when you beat them, it's a big point swing, you know. So I think those are going to be the events that are going to determine who wins. And, of course, we still got to take care of our own business, and that's what we got to worry about.
You mentioned the men may not be the healthiest. How are your women athletes? How's their health coming in?
They're really healthy coming in, and they're on the upswing, and I'm really excited about to see what all they can do. You know, the relay's running better now than it was a month ago.
Wow.
Got a 4x4 relay in, so we're pretty excited. Shakari Richardson, Tania Marshall in the hurdle, Shakari in the 100 meters and 200. Those are some key events. And, you know, Jordy, you know, this is the first time I ever remember, but we had three women and we swept the 400 hurdles at the SEC meet, and all three of those women have a chance of making the final here, which would be a huge event for us.
Yes. Yes. Well, look, I know you're busy. Good luck. 4 o'clock is the start today. It'll go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We wish you nothing but the best. We'll be watching. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope your athletes stay healthy. I know they'll give it everything they've got, and congratulations to date, but let's see what happens.
Thanks, Jordy. Appreciate it.
Buddy, you take care. Dennis Shaver, very kind to jump on board for a few minutes. Again, the NCAA Championships, day one today, starting at 4 o'clock in Austin, Texas. And Mondo starts jumping at 4:30. Oh, you don't think I'm setting the DVR, do you? You darn right I am. I got to watch this kid do his thing, and we wish him nothing. But can you imagine what it must be like to be a member of the DePlantis family? Goodness gracious. I'm sure mom and dad are in Austin. They'll do this. They'll watch all of that stuff. Then they'll fly back Saturday and get ready for the 2 o'clock afternoon game with Antoine, the all-time hit leader for LSU. Not a bad thank you to DePlantis family for sending your children to LSU. They are spectacular. And again, as Dennis Shaver said, Antoine drafted today, 12th round, by the New York Mets. So Josh Smith goes to the Yankees. Antoine DePlantis goes to the Mets. Maybe they can share an apartment one day up there in the Big Apple. Maybe. But quite a coup for both of them. Speaking of that, coming up in hour number two, we'll have our Hot Topic segment to start off the hour as we always do. Cole Freeman was a starting second baseman for LSU last season. He is now in professional baseball. What's it like for him? What insight can he share? What's the good? What's the bad? What's the ugly? And what does he think about this LSU baseball team? And how does Paul Maneri get these guys always to play their best at the right time? I'm telling you, they're a different team than they were a month ago, than they were 3 weeks ago. They're a completely different team, playing with confidence. They're healthy, and they're a dangerous ball club. So we'll talk to Cole Freeman about that. And then Michael Hugan makes his every Wednesday stop to talk all things college football. What's he think about booze in Tiger Stadium? And who would people want to beat more? Steve Spurrier in his prime or Nick Saban in his prime? We'll pose the question to Michael Hugan. It's all coming up. Hour number one is history. Brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. And by ShopRite, Tobacco Plus discount outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. Hour number two, straight ahead. Come on back.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All right, hour number two of two, and away we go on this Wednesday, June the 5th, the year 2019. CD's there, I am here, glad you're there, and away we go. Just a few minutes ago, I'm getting this Twitter stuff down. I'm starting to understand it. Maurice Hampton says, thank you, Padres, for allowing me to hear my name called today. It's still hashtag Go Tigers. And I can't wait to get to Baton Rouge. Let's work. MLB Draft came out with the 23rd round pick of the 2019 MLB Draft. The Padres select Memphis University School Tennessee's Maurice Hampton, who's ranked number 29 on MLB Pipeline's top 200 prospects list. So he turned down 1.8. He's going to play corner for DBU and Ed O, and he's going to play center field for Paul Maneri. Got him for 3 years. It's a win-win. Speaking of win, let's do what we do all the time at this time of day. CD, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Yes, indeed. CD, good afternoon, my friend. What's up?
Not a whole lot, Jordy, on this Wednesday, but I want to start things off looking at the MLB draft and one person in particular, the lone Tiger getting drafted in the final day, Antoine Duplantis, Jordy. 12th round pick, 358th overall, 8 rounds above what he was last year. What do you think was the reason why he only got drafted into the 12th round? Because it felt like he could have gotten a lot higher. Why do you think that was?
A senior. They know they can get him. He has nowhere else to go.
No leverage.
Leverage is all with MLB. If he had been a junior, I'm sure it would have been much higher. But look, I think he set the all-time hit record. He's playing in a super regional, and we had him on earlier this week. He wouldn't have changed a thing. So good for him. If he's good enough, he'll climb his way up, and he'll get the big payday at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, Jordy, he's definitely going to wind up making his hay, and you got to think about it, Jordy. Hypothetically, maybe in the next couple of years, you have probably the most stellar outfield you can about imagine, Jordy, because you'll have Antoine Duplantis. Jake Mangum got drafted earlier in MLB draft by the Mets. Yep. And then you have the man everybody wants to see succeed, Jordy, Tim Tebow.
Tebow!
Imagine that triad in the outfield.
Duplantis could be the next Ichiro. The way he hits the ball, slaps it around, I mean, you never know. You never know.
I hope he does extremely well, Jordy.
I do too.
He's just such
a
great representative of LSU and Lafayette in general.
We talked about it. What about that Duplantis family?
Yes.
I mean, gee, between Twan, Mondo, shoot. Thank you, parents, for sending him down the interstate. Thank you.
Well, Jordy, I mean, you're bringing this up. I mean, they went to LSU as well, but it's making me think, Jordy, best athlete family of all time, the Duplantises? Am I wrong on that?
I can't imagine anybody else being as highly decorated. Yeah, I think they're at the top of the list, number one.
I mean, it's probably them and the Mannings, I would think, number one, number two.
Yeah, but at LSU, for sure, number one.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah, heck yeah.
All right, Jordy, moving over to, I know what you love, and that is college basketball, because some big news came out earlier today. The NCAA, it's moving the three-point line back as part of some new rule changes being moved back to the international distance of 22 feet 1 3/4. You surprised they're going to move it back, Jordy?
I am, to be quite honest with you. I thought the college game was pretty good as is, but maybe some of the coaches said, man, we're tired of not having a mid-range game. It's either layups or it's three-pointers.
Yep.
So maybe they want to make it a little bit more challenging, and maybe this will take some of those bigs and make them play like bigs with their backs to the bucket. So it'll be interesting to see. LSU basketball in particular, I think that's their weak spot as of right here, right now, is their ability to knock down the three. Now you're going back a little bit further. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see how scoring either stays the same or goes down a little bit because of this rule change.
I have to agree with you, Jordy. I think that's definitely going to be something to kind of keep an eye on in the next few weeks concerning the NBA, the college basketball game, how it's going to change with this new rule in place. But I got to say, Jordy, some awesome stuff. Got to give some congrats. We talked a lot about the MLB draft today, but we got to kind of shift things over to the NFL, more specifically the New Orleans Saints. Got to give some love to Reggie Bush and Marcus Colson, the first pick and the last pick of that 2006 NFL draft.
Yeah, what a draft.
Both of them entering the Saints Hall of Fame. They announced today.
Yeah, but the big question I have for you, what happened to Sean Payton? Why did he shave his head?
I don't know, Jordy. Maybe it's a ritual that Sean Payton's like, you know what? Like, the last 2 years, we've gotten kind of hosed. I guess he's going towards
superstitious?
A different superstition.
I mean, he's cleanly shaven. I mean, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, it's weird, you know. But
I don't know why he did it, but he did it. Maybe it's getting hot out there in these at these mini camps or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's been incredibly hot in the Acadia area. It's almost certain.
Yes.
He's definitely doing that to get that done. And also, it'll grow back before the season started. Be a lot more just high and tight as opposed to maybe what it had been in the past. But it'll look weird if it's not necessarily fully grown in, like during the preseason. Because of him wearing that visor, you'll just see the chrome dome just pop out right there.
Hey, whatever. Look, I can't talk about I'm follically challenged at this point in time.
Oh, I'm getting there as well.
I used to have more hair than, oh, my God.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah, it was crazy, but it kind of happens. But anyway, I'm happy where I am. I'm not coming home yet, CD. I'm not coming home yet.
I hope not, Jordy. I hope not.
My kids will shoot me. Don't do it, Dad. Don't do it. It won't grow back. I said, okay, I won't do it. Not coming home yet, baby.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. That is tremendous stuff right there. And big news just kind of popped up about Vince Carter, 22nd season. He officially is announcing he is going to retire finally, right, Jordy?
Yeah, still one of the greatest dunkers I've ever seen,
yes.
By all means. But the time has come. He'll probably get into coaching. Good for him. But what a career. 22 years up and down a court. That's absurd. Nobody can come close to that. I'm sorry.
Oh, exactly. It's amazing to see what he's been able to do over the course of his career and still have a decent one at that. He didn't do the wrong thing like you see some of these veterans do, go join these super teams to go chase a ring. Looking at you, JaVale McGee, I think the list can go on and on and on with a lot of these players. So it's just great to see a guy like that kind of go out on his own terms.
It's not like he's just he's still contributing. He is still playing. He's not getting as many minutes, but he's getting you double figures. He still can ball. It's amazing. Amazing. All right. We look forward to Hot Topics tomorrow, my friend.
Looking forward to it.
Brought to you by, yes, indeed, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best on the planet. The Biard family right there in St. Martinville. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef Hot Sauce on it. Cole Freeman, next, the Jordy Helpert Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back as we continue our coverage of LSU baseball and heading into the Super Regional. I always like to bring back ex-players that have been through this, done all this, and are now trying to make a livelihood playing Major League Baseball. And we welcome back to the fray our good friend Mr. Cole Freeman. From Mandeville, Louisiana, and Lakeshore High School, Delgado Community College, and then found his way to LSU, and now working his way up the charts in baseball, professional baseball. Cole, thanks for the time, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on.
Where are we these days? Tell me about where are you exactly right here, right now?
Right here, right now, we had a road trip. I'm in High A right now for the Washington Nationals in Potomac, about an hour outside of D.C. So we just ended the road trip, and we actually got one of our few off days of the year today. So soaking that up.
Wow. And you spent time with us. You are so kind. man alive. That's so what do you do on a rare day off to fill your time? You just rest? You get out and go to a good restaurant? You play golf? What do you do?
No, I'm not much of a golfer. Honestly, I like to kind of try and stay out the sun as much as I can. But, you know, you just kind of catch up on your sleep a little bit. We got back at about 3 a.m. last night, so slept until about 11, woke up, called my parents, went and got something to eat. And now I'm sitting down in the basement just playing this game Fortnite that I think a lot of people know what it is, and just kind of hanging out with the boys.
Don't challenge my daughter on that because she's good. She's too good. I got to get that darn thing away from her, man. That's amazing. I'm just curious, how's the experience been for you? You work all your life. You want to play baseball professionally, and so now here you are, High A. What's it been like for you?
You know, it's been baseball, honestly. I mean, it's been, you know, the ups and downs. There's been really good times and there's been really bad times. The experience overall has been, you know, tremendous. It's been awesome. I think one of the coolest things is getting to meet a lot of different people from, you know, not just the United States, from, you know, around the world, to the Dominican, Venezuela, all that. And it's been eye-opening. It's been a lot of fun, no doubt. But and there's also been some stuff that was unexpected. But I mean that's part
for
of
instance,
it, and that's part of getting.
For instance, what's unexpected?
I think one is playing with an infield that doesn't speak any Spanish. you know, I'm out here trying to learn some Spanish when I'm still kind of trying to learn English. but yeah, I mean, in that sense, or also, I mean, you're facing guys that are everybody's stud in college. I mean, there's no breaks at any point. And I mean, I think the biggest thing is just the mental grind of literally going out there every single day. And, you know, having to perform, you know, you got 4 or 5 at-bats, having to lock it in for 9 innings. Yeah. And knowing that if you just take one pitch off, you know, it can kind of, you know, set you back a little bit.
Cole Freeman, kind enough to join us. I was always curious. You go to LSU and there, it's like a fraternity. And you guys are brothers and will be for the rest of your life. You get to pro baseball, and it's all about everybody just wants to move up. They don't want to be where you are. You don't want to be where you are long. You want to show enough that you get called up to the next level. And then the next level, it's so much about the individual. Am I wrong there?
No, I mean, that's pretty spot on. I think that's one of the toughest things you kind of got to get used to once you get into pro ball, because, I mean, you go your whole life and all your – taught is, you know, it's team, and I mean, like you said, once you get to this point, I mean, I don't want to say winning isn't important, but I mean, it's mainly like, hey, look, you know, you got to get out there, you got to get better, you got to work on what they want you to work on, what you need to get better at, and you know, you got to make improvement. Now obviously winning is the ultimate goal too, but I mean, it's a little weird when you know after a loss at in college at LSU or Delgado or something like that, you know, you're crushed.
Yes.
And I think one of the biggest things I talked to my parents about was, you know, it was a little awkward almost that you come into the clubhouse after the game and, you know, you just lost and there's music being played and, you know, people are talking and it's, you know, honestly not that big of a deal just because, one, you're going out there again for the next, you know, 140 days. And, you know, it's just not as big of a deal as losing a game in college.
Yeah.
So
far more games to be played where you are. And that's the fun part of it. Cole Freeman, kind enough to join us. LSU about to play in the Super Regional. What is it about Paul Maneri as an ex-player of his? He always seems to get you guys and this team specifically to be playing their best baseball when it really matters. How does he do that?
I mean, he kind of tells you at the beginning of the season, and obviously, you know, once you step on campus, that, the whole season matters. But, you know, obviously at the end of the season is when you want to be clicking. And, you know, there's something about Coach Maneri that, you know, he always seems to find a way to get the best out of somebody. And a lot of times if sometimes players will crack. And I think that's when you mm-hmm. see some of the players that end up transferring out. But, I mean, I think he does a great job in putting pressure on you and just practice and stuff. Because obviously, you know, once it comes game time, there's no bigger stage than playing for LSU in front of 12,000 and, you know, all the pressure of just performing. But I think he's an absolute unbelievable and more than anything an unbelievable guy. And, you know, he doesn't make too big of a deal out of it at the beginning of the season, but he just wants to see what you're going to do when that pressure comes forth and, you know, how you're going to react. And, yeah, like you said, for some reason, he always knows how to get the best out of guys, and he does it always at the end of the season. And that's why you always see LSU there at the final time.
Yeah. Colton, I mean, just between you, me, and the fence post, does he when he loses his cool, does Paul really – can he really get mad like some people can? Because he's the nicest guy in the world to me. I mean, does he blow his stack to you guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he knows – I think what he does a really good job is he understands the type of player each individual person is, and he knows how to kind of, I guess, in a way, come at them.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you, for example, my first time ever running out the shortstop was my third game at LSU, and I ended up mishandling a ball in the first inning, and it could have been a double play. Obviously, the next guy comes up, hits a double, and we're down 2-0. And he met me at the end of the dugout and said a few choice words and saying, you know, kind of lighten me up. I won't go obviously too far in the detail, but, you know, kind of saying, hey, look, you know, you got to get it together. And, you know, I mean, really after that, we never had anything because I think he kind of understood that, you know, I didn't need anybody else kind of getting into me because I was going to be hard enough on myself. Yeah. But, I mean, sometimes there's guys that do need to be lit up, and he knows how to do that, but he also will stay away from people that know that they're going to take care of their business. So, I mean, that's obviously awesome. Knows we're not trying to, you know, mess up or whatever,
right.
But honestly just want to go out there and, you know, do the best for our team and do the best for him because, you know, he does so much for us.
And back to your point about how, he's not afraid to do things, experiment. I remember in 2016 you started all of LSU's games, but you played second base for the majority of the year. But you also started a few games at shortstop. You even started some games at third base. He's trying to find out where you're the best. And I think that's what it's all about.
Right. I mean, obviously each position is kind of a different mindset too. He's just kind of trying to see which fits the team best and what gets the best out of you too. So, that's why a lot of the times – at the beginning of the season, you see a lot of different guys in there because, I mean, some guys sometimes aren't practice players. For some reason, they're gamers. And when the lights come on and they get out there, they might have been struggling in the fall. But for some reason, you know, when stuff's on the line and the pressure's on, they step forward to the challenge. And, that's why at the end of the season, you see a lot of guys, different positions, different parts of the lineup. And, obviously at the end, it's pretty solidified who your guys are going to be.
You're wearing number 8 in pro baseball? I mean, that was quite an honor for you to wear that jersey back in the 2017 season. Are you still repping that number now?
I got to last year. I moved up this year, and we had a guy returning from last year that had that number. So I wasn't able to wear that number this year. But, obviously as much as I can. I wouldn't mind wearing that number, but it didn't work out for me to wear that this year.
All right, I'll let you go quickly here because I know it's an off day, and that Fortnite, your fingers are starting to twitch because you want to play. I understand it. The best thing about minor league baseball is?
You're playing baseball for a living. by far.
The worst thing about minor league baseball is?
You're away from your family, for sure, for a long period of time.
Okay. Is playing baseball for LSU more luxurious than where you are right now? I mean, travel, all that kind of stuff, or is it similar?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, at LSU, you're flying, you know, charter flights. You're getting top of the line food. You got whatever type of clothes you could possibly need, and you're obviously playing at the greatest college stadium in the country.
You have a chance to watch this team at all this year? Have you been able to follow up with them?
Oh, yeah. I actually was on the phone with Antoine Duplantis when you called. Obviously I got a bunch of guys that I still played with that are there, with Josh Smith, Watson, Hess, and Antoine and all them. I keep up with them as much as possible. I mean, I obviously enjoy watching them.
All right. Well, look, represent LSU well in the minors, and don't let those other SEC teams get the better of you, man. We gotta keep the Tigers in the pipeline. But I can't thank you enough for your time, man. Nothing but good luck and success to you. And we'll be following your career as you climb up the ladder, big guy. So thank you so much, and all the best of luck to you.
I really appreciate that, and go Tigers.
All right, buddy. You take care. Okay, it's Cole Freeman. High A baseball. He is outside of Washington, D.C. with a rare day off. And playing ball at LSU, a lot better than minor league baseball. Remember that, guys. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, no matter what the weather's like, when we get to talk to Michael Huguenin, it's always a sunshiny day because he's the best in the business, writing for The Athletic and doing a lot of work for them, and we're always appreciative of his time. Good afternoon, my friend. How you been, buddy?
Been pretty good.
We've got college baseball going on. A lot of SEC teams. I mean, we got five SEC teams still in the fray. We had the SEC spring meetings that closed up, and I'm curious as to your thoughts. What would it have been like when Michael Huguenin was in college if they had enacted the rule that they're enacting now, and each school can do what they please with it, with the fact that they're going to allow booze throughout the stadium now?
Yeah, well, I'm old enough to remember when the drinking age was 18, so it would have been more difficult back in those days. But you and I have talked about this numerous times. It's all about money now, and this is a new revenue stream for schools. And everybody knows that a lot of money is being spent in college athletics. Administrators looking for new ways to find money. Found money. And I guess there's four schools that have said on the record, we're not doing this, at least for 2019. That's fine. My presumption is within three or four seasons, probably at least 10 of the 14 SEC schools will be selling alcohol at athletic events because they're not going to be able to resist the allure of more money.
Why would four of the 10 not do it? Just out of curiosity.
I think there are certain states in the South where I think there will be
religious beliefs come into play.
No, I didn't want to say that, but tremendous public pressure not to allow booze in the stands. And eventually, I think that's going to go away. And I think a year, 20 years from now, people are going to look back and go, wow, I can't believe that they never, there was a ban on alcohol sales at college stadiums. How could they have been turning down all that money? And that's what, again, it's not hard to understand. That's what this is about. They're going to make a heck of a lot more money with alcohol sales. Let's just use LSU as an example. Let's say you make, let's say $1 million per home game is made for football. That's $6 or $7 million bucks a year.
Yep.
That will cover increased coaching salaries. Mm-hmm. Two years of that would maybe upgrade football facilities, maybe use some of that football money to make something nice with the softball field or at Alex Box Stadium. So
right.
ADs are, I think secretly are all loving this.
This is all about making more money. It's all about trying to get people to go to the games and stay at the games.
Yeah.
But I've always been a believer in this. I don't know what they're going to charge for beers, and that's all good and dandy. But to me, the only way to get people to come to the games and to stay at the games is to have a really good opponent. Tiger Stadium's always full when they're playing Alabama and they're playing Georgia and they're playing Auburn and they're playing Florida. That's not an issue. It's all these non-conference games that people just don't care about.
That's true. And I think that's part of it. But I think if you are making your non-conference schedule a little bit more difficult, that means you're going to make even more money from alcohol. So, but you're right. I mean, if you're sitting at home in your den with the big screen TV and all the free food and drink you want, and then you think about, do I want to go spend 8 hours driving to and from the game, tailgating, getting out of the parking lot, and the game itself, and I got to buy tickets, I got to buy drinks, I have to pay for parking, I got to buy a hamburger, that's a $200 outlay for two of us. So the monetary aspect is important as well, but yeah. I think you're right. I mean, if you want people to show up, you got to win games, and you got to make it an enjoyable experience. And the easiest way to make it an enjoyable experience is to win a game. Yeah, of course.
Michael Hugan and The Athletic, kind enough to join us. We see the uproar when a coach leaves one school in the SEC and goes to another. Mullen leaves Mississippi State, goes to Florida, and yet we've got athletic directors hopping around all over the place. Scott Woodward from A&M comes to LSU. Russ Bjork goes from Ole Miss to A&M. Your thoughts on that? Is there a problem with that or no problem at all?
I'm not sure there's a problem, but it is interesting in that evidently SEC schools might only feel comfortable about hiring ADs from within. They know what's going on in this league, all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure I buy that. I'll be honest, the fact that Bjork got hired at Texas A&M, here's a guy who oversaw a program that got put on probation, blatant cheating, and yet a team not only in the same league but in the same division hires him as the AD. And Russ Bjork did a nice job as the Ole Miss AD. It's hard for me to believe, I don't want to make people mad, but it's sort of hard for me to believe that if you're Texas A&M, you couldn't have found a guy with Ross Bjork's credentials whose football program did not cheat and break into.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Amazing. Mike Hugan and The Athletic joining us. The Big Ten and the SEC are going to be heading to Las Vegas soon for the Las Vegas Bowl, taking turns facing the Pac-12 when the game moves into the new billion-dollar NFL stadium in 2020. It sounds like a no-brainer to me. You?
Yeah, I think I was on another show, and they're like, hey, the SEC just traded Shreveport for Las Vegas. And in some respects, that's what's happened. But I have to admit, if I'm nothing against Shreveport, nothing against Birmingham, nothing against Charlotte, Nashville. The idea that if my team goes 7-5, and if I want to see them play, I get to go to Vegas to watch them play. Hey, I'm going. So I think it is an interesting bowl to add to the mix. Going to Vegas is different than going to Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah.
Birmingham, Shreveport, all those kind of things. So it's a good addition to the SEC Bowl rotation.
Michael Hugan and The Athletic joining us. We know that the SEC is solid. There's a new Big Ten commissioner in Kevin Warren. What do you know about Kevin Warren?
Not much. People that deal with him in the NFL speak extremely highly of him. And the one thing that when his name surfaced, I guess it was Monday night that the news broke, and then you look into his bio and you go, oh my goodness, he used to work for Mike Slive. Had a law firm that handled NCAA appeals and stuff like that. So Slive evidently thinks extremely highly of him. And if you're an SEC fan and Mike Slive likes you, I think SEC fans automatically go, well, he must be a pretty good guy if Mike Slive likes him. So it's interesting, obviously, that the first Power Five commissioner that's a black man. He is, again, you talk to people in the NFL who dealt with him, extremely high marks. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I think the college athletic world is so insular. And maybe a guy in this much power, with this much power, wielding this much power, coming in from the outside, is going to have some different ways of doing things and different viewpoints. And given the way you and I and others make fun of the NCAA, good job. Good job hiring somebody that's a little bit different than the norm. So my presumption is he's going to do a good job. The Big Ten is enormously wealthy, even more so than the SEC, because Jim Delaney was a forward thinker. The key, obviously, is that the Big Ten folks need to continue to be forward thinkers. But there's a reason the SEC and Big Ten are printing money, and every other league is sprinting after them. They had good ideas first and were willing to implement them. And my presumption is that the new Big Ten is going to be the same as the old Big Ten. They're going to be aggressive.
Michael Hugan and The Athletic joining us. You said they're printing money. Now we're getting ready to start the ACC network. Is that going to take any money from these other conferences, or is the ACC now going to be printing money?
I think that the ACC is a little bit behind the curve. The Pac-12 tried to get in there. The Pac-12 network is a joke. Uh-huh. The ACC network, they're the fourth to do your own network. I don't think the money is there. It's obviously not going to be quite as much. And the Big 12 is sort of out there adrift. But, no, the ACC is going to be, I think, become solidly number three in terms of the money coming in. But it's not catching. No other league. The Big 10, SEC, unless the management all of a sudden becomes abysmal, those schools are out there for good now. Everybody else.
You mentioned the Big 12. Of course, there's the Longhorn Network. Is that still doing well? I never hear of it anymore. And why wouldn't the Big 12 get together and say, look, you've already got this thing in place. Let's drop the Longhorn Network and let's expand it and call it the Big 12 Network. I don't know.
I don't think there's enough clamor for the Longhorn Network. I actually get that on DirecTV, and I don't get the Pac-12 Network, which is a failing of the Pac-12 Network. I don't think there's the appetite, so to speak. I think there's an appetite for Oklahoma sports, for Texas sports, but I'm not sure if there's an appetite for Iowa State sports, Kansas State, anything Kansas other than basketball. So maybe there's going to be a Big 12 Network eventually, but I don't think it's going to be very successful. And again, I think the Big Ten and SEC were the trendsetters. And generally, when you set trends, you're out there in front of everybody for good. And I think that's the case when it comes to having your own network.
I'm just shocked that presidents, chancellors haven't gotten on these athletic directors and others inside that Big 12 conference and say, wait, why are we the only ones not without this?
Yeah, I think there's probably those talks going on, but again, I think there was ESPN gladly partnered with the ACC. I'm not sure anybody would gladly partner with the Big 12 in that type of network unless the monetary figures were a heck of a lot lower than what the figures being bandied about regarding the ACC are, and the ACC figures are a lot lower than the figures for the Big Ten and SEC. And the schools that you really wonder about are the AAC schools, the Sun Belt schools, the Mountain West schools. They're falling further and further behind.
Mike Hugan in The Athletic. Nick Saban speaks again. It looks like it's going to work because he now wants an official in the television booth because apparently the commentators get the rules wrong when it comes to officiating, and he wants an official in the booth. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, he wants an official in the booth, and, you know, transparency is a good thing. And,
yeah,
you know, if you watch a Fox game every weekend, pro or college, there's a rules official on call. If you watch a CBS NFL game on Sundays, there's a rules official on call, basically. So I think eventually it's going to be, frankly, every broadcast, because those guys, they know what they're talking about. They add context and texture to what's going on. So, you know, I think it's going to be seen. Look at that. Another example of Saban getting what he wants, but let's get serious. What fan who doesn't watch college football on Saturday doesn't want a referee in the booth explaining what the heck's going on?
I mean, I still say that one day Nick Saban is going to be the college football commissioner, and the NCAA ought to enact that. And because when he speaks, people listen and people do what he says.
That sort of is true. Yeah, yeah.
It really
and
is.
And I think that antagonizes other fans, other fan bases, and other coaches too, I'm sure. But again, I think that's a gigantic positive. Again, if you watch college football on TV on Saturdays, some of these calls are made, and you're wondering what the heck's going on. And sometimes the color commentators don't know exactly the correct rules. So this would be a move. If this indeed happens, I think it's a gigantic positive.
You've been around enough. Tell me this. Answer this one for me. In their prime, who did people around the SEC despise more and want to beat more? Steve Spurrier when he was coaching the Gators, or Nick Saban now coaching Alabama?
Well, I think it depends a little bit. I don't think any opposing fan base liked Spurrier, though I think some opposing fan bases, even if they didn't like him, thought it was funny.
Yeah. But he'd run the score up on you now.
And you know the reason? Spurrier had a personality.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Saban has a personality. He talks to people who've known him for a while, and he's quite funny, supposedly. But he doesn't show it. So in
Never
some respects,
will.
I think the answer to that is Mr. Saban, because it's like, oh my God, he's got a machine. He's so boring. All he does is beat people up, and
yeah.
he never enjoys himself.
No.
At least Spurrier, that was, I think, the one thing you would if you're a Georgia fan and Florida kicked your butt again. Okay, it happened again. What's Spurrier going to say now? How's he going to poke fun at us? And then when Saban kicks your butt, it's not like, oh, you know, he doesn't make fun of you. He'll beat you by 40 and then complain about his own team. So
yeah.
I think that after a while gets old. Dude,
yeah.
It's like, hey, Nick, have some fun, buddy.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself.
Enjoy yourself.
So I think Saban. Yeah, I think more
yeah.
fans want to beat Saban than wanted to beat Spurrier.
It's like Saban's almost got like an NFL type of a team, and Spurrier, more fun, footloose,
yes.
and more of a college
yes.
type of team. But I always share the story. I was up in the hotel after LSU beat Oklahoma to win the national championship with Saban as the coach. We're up there, we're having a beer together, and he says, Terry, I need my phone. So she answers, and he's starting to call recruits. He said, I won't even take 10 minutes off.
Right, and I think that's Spurrier, and again, I think both those guys, Saban's the best college coach ever. Spurrier, I would argue, changed football in the SEC
yes, he
for
did.
The good and created a sea change in college football as a whole. It certainly appeared as if Spurrier enjoyed things. He enjoyed winning more. And
yes.
it's almost like with Saban, it's almost like, well, we didn't lose. That's good. Whereas with Spurrier, I think it's like, you won again. It seems like Spurrier and his team had more fun, though. I will say, you talked to enough former players at Alabama, and they all speak extremely highly of Saban.
Yeah,
love playing for the
guy. That winning cures everything, man. It cures everything. Michael, thank you so much, my friend. Have a great rest of your week, and we always look forward to talking to you, buddy. Thank you.
All right, thanks, man. Talk to you next week.
All right, that's Michael Hugan, the best in the business for The Athletic. here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Yes, it does. We got the Super Regional. Can't get out to the box. Stay cold. Stay cool. Have great food and watch all the ball games at Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Back to wrap things up. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, boys and girls. Don't forget about DC's little capital X sign when you're on the highways and the byways, including I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in the lovely town of Brobridge. Go see Frankie DC's place, DC's little capital X sign. Everything you need and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. They got so many great items, but they're famous. I mean famous for their cheeseburger. It is, whoo, mouth-wateringly, finger-licking, knuckle-sucking good. It really is. DC's little capital X on I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. On this day in sports history, we go back to June 5th, the year 1991, the NBA Finals, Game 2, the Chicago Bulls and the L.A. Lakers. Michael Jordan drives the lane, goes up with his right hand, still in the air, shifts it over to his left hand in midair, kisses it off the glass, one of the iconic shots in NBA history, as Marv Albert on the call makes it happen, and the Jordan-led Bulls go on to win the NBA Finals. And they would win three in a row. Michael, of course, would take a sabbatical trying to play baseball. He'd come back and then win three more in a row. But on this day, June 5th, 1991, his airness switches the ball from right hand to left hand in midair to the chagrin of the L.A. Lakers. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you're having a great day. And you share your birthday with the likes of, Kevin Falk, the Karen Crow Kid, celebrating a birthday today. Former LSU basketball player Marcus Thornton sharing a birthday today as well. On the national scene, well, we've got, Kenny G. Happy 63rd birthday to the great artist known as Kenny G. Yes, indeed. Who else? Oh, I got another one here. It's coming. Scanning. Mark Wahlberg. Happy 48th birthday to Mark Wahlberg. And if it's your anniversary, man, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. Special thanks to our guest, Josh Smith, drafted by the New York Yankees in the second round. Cole Freeman, who is now living the dream, playing in a high A Major League Baseball for the Washington Nationals. And our good friend, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Fun, fun show. Tomorrow, we'll recap Game 3 of the NBA Finals, more on the Super Regional, and whatever else is coming down the pipeline. CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. Come on back, same time, 2 to 4, same station, 103.7 The Game, tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.